We're going to continue with these incredible stories. Ron Garner with us. Next up, also, J.J. Hertak joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Ron Garner with us, and of course, now we're joined with none other than J.J. Hertak. J.J., the founder and president of the Academy for Future Science. Dr. Hertak, also an anthropologist, archaeologist, instrumental in finding the Osiris Tomo in Egypt, the tomb there, where remote sensing was able to pick it up. He is very well known for his information that ranges from evidence of UFOs to the development of new cosmology as well. Dr. J.J. Hertak on Coast to Coast. Hey, J.J., welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's great to be with you on this so-called blood red moon night.
Yeah,
we've got
great.
Three more of those. I had a chance to watch some of it on the internet while we were doing the show, and it didn't look that reddish orange to me.
No, we just posted it on our website, Keys of Enoch. It's called the Facebook group page, Keys of Enoch Facebook group page, where here in Arizona it looks beautiful. Of course, it has those reddish plumes because the Earth going between the sun and the moon does not give the complete blackout. And so you've got these interesting details, very auspicious with our topic tonight regarding ET intelligence and what some believe is the sign of disclosure that's close at hand.
Yeah, Ron thinks it's going to come. I've gone at it with Steve Bassett, telling Steve it's not going to happen, not this way at least. But we could get the Edward Mitchells out there and those kinds of folks who continue to come forward. Maybe it could happen that way. J.J., what have you been working on lately?
I've just finished a film for my work with African shamans called Voice of Africa, Credo Mutwai. It's a project that has taken me 27 years to put together. It deals with the cosmology of the Africans, particularly through the eyes of a shaman or a mystical philosopher point of view. And some of the African ET material is in this film. I think it's going to be the recipient of several rewards, and it's now available for those in the radio audience who may be interested.
Super. Well, you're always doing some cutting edge work, so I'm glad you're here to spend some time with us. Let's talk about this Brazilian Roswell case. Ron, do you want to set the stage for this first, and then we'll have J.J. Chime in on it?
Yeah, I mentioned a little bit in the last hour that Dr. Lear and I were working on this together to try and get this orthopedic surgeon to come on television, either in Brazil or in Mexico. And Dr. Hertak was there with John Mack. Was it 96, Dr. Hertak?
Listen, what happened is John and I were talking to the University of Johannesburg Medical School in December 95, and then I went on to Brazil. He went back to the States, and then he later came down to interview the girls in Virginia. When I was a guest of the mayor of Sao Paulo, on the subject of ET reality, a message came through that there was a crash and a live subject that was there that was being investigated. And I was shown information from the office of the mayor that this was a very important subject, which attracted my attention. Needless to say, I was very interested in this, which I can now detail. If you're interested, I concur with Ron Gardner and the work of Roger Lear, who we really love and respect for his work also on the same case, the Brazilian Roswell case.
You know, if you go to my website, area51thetruth.com, click on UFO researchers, and you'll see right at the top Dr. Roger Lear talking about the presentation at Caltech. You were there too, Dr. Hertak. Could you mention what happened at Caltech in 2008?
Well, I was fascinated with Roger. We were sitting together in the audience, and as Ron, you have described so nicely, Dr. Dan Burrish was able to speak about his work with the Ganesh particle and was able to show a graphic simulations of what this means in terms of opening up the portal to other areas of discovery. In a sense, showing that our periodic chart is not complete. There are other factors there. And of course, Burrish has been a subject of much controversy. If you can't kill the message, you kill the messenger. So
right.
He has been attacked from all sides. But I can tell you, I was invited to the suite that Albert Einstein used when he was at Caltech, and I felt really good energy with Dan Burrish when he invited me to be in that same quarters. So I concur with Ron's work, and particularly the new website, which brings together all of the missing pieces of this very interesting odyssey where science and a new cosmology converge.
Well, it's been an amazing run here with this. Now, how would you rate the Brazilian Roswell case with the U.S. Roswell case, JJ?
I would say that there is very similar situations, although the subjects here in Brazil were classified by some of the investigators as being a sub-ET type or alien, demonstrating a lack of high levels of intelligence or motor coordination. They were hybrid types, unlike the specimens that were gathered both at Roswell and Aztec, New Mexico. When I was interested in the specimens, because they were brought from Virginia by a military convoy down to the University of Campinas, Brazil. At that time, I was a consultant to a company called LaserTech, which was working with students at the University of Campinas, and I had an opportunity to talk to several of the staff members connected with the medical team that did look at the specimens. Of course, they were sworn to secrecy, so what was done is we were able to use what we call body language or eye movements that suggested that there was something very, very important, so important that ultimately these specimens had to be put on a special plane and taken to Panama. But in so many words, I was very, very touched by the depth of the Brazilian investigators and Listoe, which was one of their, and it is still their large journal like Time Magazine, carried a major story on the ET hybrid types. So in that respect, it's much different from Roswell. We're dealing with subcategories of intelligence.
And Ron, how do these craft crash? I mean, you would think with the sophistication of getting here, that would never happen.
Well, I can tell you why the ones crashed in Roswell, because I've interviewed Philip Corso in 1997 in Roswell with Bill Burns. Bill Burns, your buddy.
Yep.
I love him and his wife, Nancy. They're terrific. I was on the cover of UFO Magazine with Bill Burns back in 04 talking about the Burry story. But what Corso said was that they had pencil beam radars back then. And in 47, I have him on tape telling about it, and Bill Burns talks about it a great deal. In fact, I have a documentary on my other website, which is Area51JRod.com, all about Philip Corso. I'd love to talk more about that later. So what Corso said, that they brought them down because he calls it a gate. There's a geosynchronistic anomaly somehow, and these gates come through. These beings come through these gates. And what Corso makes a big deal out of is that you'll never understand ufology unless you understand time travel, because they're connected. And Philip Corso's son spoke at a presentation with Bill Bassett, and I have that tape of him, and he emphasized that with his father. His father said, you'll never understand unless it's time travel. So they warp space-time. And when you see all these UFOs flying around, they're flying time machines.
Yeah.
And Peter Davenport does a wonderful job. I love that you have him on and explaining all of these. And people ask me what percentage of them are theirs and what percentage are ours. Well, I don't know, but I think it's about 20% ours, maybe 30%, and 70% of theirs, because we do not have the – we're building them. I was at John Lear's birthday party, like I said, 6 years ago, his 65th birthday party, and he was having a good time, and he had SR-71 pilots and CIA agents and all kinds of people. And I said to John, have one of your people tell about what happened at Palmdale at the production facility. So this guy got up, I have him on tape, and he said that he was there, and there was a facility where they were building the F-17s on a flight line, and this Air Force general came there, and there was a rumor that they were building UFOs on the other side of the wall. And the general said, oh, that's baloney. So he took a fire axe, and he chopped through the wall, and I'll be goddamn, you know, there was a whole flight line of UFOs being built. So the trucks would pull up to the dock, the red cases would go to the right, the left, and over to the, and that just makes sense. And I have this guy on tape, and John Lear says that's true. So they're building them, and that's what Bill Uhouse says. And so a lot of these sightings are our craft, and that's where I go back to Ben Rich and saying that we have things out in the desert that would make George Lucas drool, because we have these craft. And my take is that the Triangle craft and you know, are flying into Area 51. They are over Europe. And, you know, Art Bell, I have him on one of my videos where he was explaining they came over Pahrump going about 20 miles an hour, just floating into Area 51. So he's seen them. And Will Uhouse lives in Pahrump also. That's Bill Uhouse's son. Bill's passed over, but Will has said that his father gave him a cache of information that he will release at the right time.
And Ron, you have all this on film. This is the fantastic library that you put together. I helped you with some of this. And
yeah, you're my scientific advisor.
This is the best of the best.
Yeah, you're my scientific advisor. You've done a great job there.
At any point, JJ, are these ETs, whatever they may be, are they dangerous to us?
Yes and no. Some of the experimental ones that are taking human subjects for what I will call medical examination or to look at our DNA as they have done from claims of abductees would suggest that they violate human free will and what we will call the importance of the human body as something that's very, very special to the human evolution. Other levels of intelligence that are more advanced, I call them UTs, ultra-terrestrial, do respect the human mind. That the whole paradigm of science, however, does not recognize the importance of consciousness. And this is a new area of science. Consciousness is beginning to be seen as the hidden variable for quantum transitions. It's in the area of consciousness that these incredible things can be done with the power of mind and technology. So they don't have to experiment with human subjects and go through all of this that they've been going through for tens of generations. But there is a conflict going on between different ET groups, and this has caused many of the government officials I've talked to throughout the world to be reluctant to come out with specific information because there's too many of these cosmic cultures at our doorstep. You know, what storyline is the one that's going to be the most attractive?
So they're trying to figure out themselves. That's one of the reasons for the cover-up is because, and Mitchell says this on one of the videos, Edgar Mitchell, that they don't know what to do, and they can't tell people, they can't protect the skies.
Nope.
There's cattle mutilation, there's beautiful crop circles, and all of these things flying around. But Majestic 12, I want to emphasize this, the reason I have all these videos and 3D dimensional of Area 51 S4, the most secret base in the world, is because Majestic authorizes, Dan Burrish is the poster boy for disclosure, and for whatever crazy reason, Ron Garner is the media guy that's supposed to make it happen. So
is Burr still doing what he's doing? I mean, is he still public?
Yeah, he has a website, and he has his daughter with him now. He's a very conscientious person. He takes a daughter to school and helps her with her homework. And but I'll bring this up because this I'm showing why, how the people keep things covered up. I was in his apartment there because I had an apartment I rented just 100 feet from his apartment. That's where I did all these interviews. And in his apartment, he has three daughters. None of them are biologically his, but he loves them. And in their apartment, they have toys from the floor to the ceiling. They can't let these children play outside because they're afraid they'll be kidnapped and held for ransom.
Oh, my God. So they're inside all the time.
Inside all the time. It's terrible. And, you know, and of course, his ex-wife now, that's all changed with his new wife. I was best man at his wedding, and it's a wonder.
Oh, you were?
I love
these
people. They're just terrific people you want to talk to. I can get them on coast at some point.
I'd like for you to do that for us, Ron,
I can set that up. But the reason I wanted to come on first is because he still has security oaths. I don't have any security oaths. I can tell all this stuff. And I have a place on my site, a newsletter, and I'm going to start blogging about all these things that I've archived for all these years. I'm also, just as a side, a curator of the Roswell UFO and Dable Museum in Roswell, New Mexico. I'm curator of a museum. I have to know this information. It's in storage now. And John Price, my co-owner, I just talked to him a couple of days ago, and the things are safe down there. I have actual people who have pieces of the Roswell craft. Linda has some, and so does Art Bell. Art's parts.
I don't know what he did with them.
I wonder myself. I would have called. I've driven by his house in Pahrump there. But I have other people that say, I don't have them, but I have people that say they have pieces of the craft. And if I ever get this museum going, I have a business plan to create a UFO space sci-fi theme park in the Hilton Hotel. The business plan is with Bob Bigelow right now.
Oh, sure.
And
well, he's the one who could fund it. You
he
know,
can
I'll
fund
tell you
it.
That.
And I gave it to him about 4 years ago, and Colin Keller said he couldn't do it right then because he was building all these space things. But I said, well, give me the business plan. Oh, no, we'll keep it.
George and Ron, what I wanted to say is the government has remote viewers, and I've been working with Elizabeth Rausch and others who are at the top end of the scientific community. These remote viewers have looked under the sands of White Sands, New Mexico. They've seen a huge craft buried there. They've looked in the Arctic Circle. They've seen underground fragments of craft buried there. So throughout the world, we have acknowledged that there are hundreds of sites that must be correlated through what I would call technological futurists who see the impact on our sociology, our way of life, our psychology, our philosophy. All of this is going to change radically overnight, and this is the importance of Ron's work, our work together with you, George, as a beacon of hope to give people an idea that there's a big panorama of intelligent life, at least 57 categories and counting, that we must be more aware of if we're going to rewrite the biological textbook of evolution.
What's the downside, JJ, on all this? I mean, what's the worst that could happen to us?
The worst side would be that people would lose a hope that the government has been giving them, shall we say, too much of the false candy, and that people would not really be able to grasp the fact that there is a spiritual consciousness component in all of this that would give them the mental security they need to make it through the changes that would come with the exposure to the cosmic cultures and cosmic civilization. So we have to be prepared for contact. We need to really have courses on extraterrestrial science at the universities. This is something that the grandson of one of the very important investigators, Roswell, Jesse Marceau, has suggested we need textbooks, and these textbooks must have the new direction of science and consciousness development so people feel that they are the spokesperson, they are part of the global commons that can bring out the connected points of interest in spite of government resistance at this time.
You agree with that, Ron?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Hertek, about these buried crafts. I know, and we talked about it privately, where there's a buried craft. And if the Coast to Coast audience will support our websites, I've already talked to Linda about this, we can go dig it up. I know where it is. I'm 85%.
All right, I want you to tell us about where you think it is when we come right back. Plus, we'll take a few phone calls with Ron Garner and J.J. Hertek on Coast to Coast AM. And our two special guests, of course, Ron Garner and Dr. J.J. Hertek, and your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. We'll take your calls in just a moment here with Ron Garner and Dr. J.J. Hertek. Ron, what do you think of the work of the late Zechariah Sitchin?
I think it's wonderful. I was one of the first people to interview him when I was working with the Two Seeker Corporation down in San Diego. We brought him over. We did a lot of work with his books and so forth. I have great respect for him. It's interesting you brought that up because that brings up something that's very important. This is from Dr. Dan Burrish and some other people, Michael Sala. Yeah, I think Michael's one of the best out there. I'm so glad you've had him on.
Yeah, just had him on.
Yeah, I know. He's great. And but what happened was that in Iraq, Saddam Hussein was working with these devices, and they were for the cuneiform, and it was time travel things. And that's one of the reasons that we went into Iraq to capture those things that Saddam Hussein had there. Now, he had a whole area in Iraq, which I think is called the Green Zone now, where he thought he was the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar.
That's
so
true.
And so he had all of this theme park that he had going there, and Dan Burrish and other people have said that when the Iraq war started, we had the best teams, the Delta teams, go in there, and they found all of this stuff in the museum. It wasn't, you didn't have to blow that. They had the keys to get in and get all this out of there, because Saddam Hussein was giving this information to Libya's, Gaddafi, and we were concerned there was French and German people there prior to that that was going to discover this technology for time travel. And so our people went to Gaddafi and said, "Mr. Gaddafi, you saw what happened to Saddam Hussein. You know those things that he gave you? Would like to get them back." And Gaddafi was a very smart guy, man. He said, "Here you are. Well, you know, it's okay." So we forgive him for Flight 800 and all that things. So there's an esoteric part of this. That's why I considered Hurtak such a wonderful person, because he is able to assess the esoteric as well as the exoteric. And we have to deal with that, because that's what Dr. Burry says is our future, is if we develop our spirituality, we can create a better world. And if you know Stephen Greer, when he goes out to meet the ET people, the craft come in and he brings two shorts and one long. The ET people, two shorts, one long. In the crop circles, people say, "Well, there's never been one over here in Silbury Hill." Next day, there's one in Silbury Hill. So what's happening is they are aware of our consciousness. That's the point I'm trying to make. And what Dr. Hurtak just explained, we have to develop our spirituality. I've been a TM meditator all my life, and so we call it meditation, you call it prayer, you call it sacred dancing, whatever it is, to entertain your higher self. And
thank you, Ron. I wanted just to say that this area of conflict in Syria is also important, because at Aleppo, there are very ancient manuscripts, just as valuable as those that were there in Iraq. And you're absolutely right. The calendar seals depict these strange beings who bring knowledge from the stars. And this is another part of an earlier cycle of history that we're beginning to really understand and approach from a different direction of a new consciousness cosmology, not only things in Iraq, but also things in Syria, even in the area called Göbekli Tepe in central Turkey.
Linda's given lectures about that at the
Conscious Life Expo. 12, 15, even 20,000 years. So we're beginning to discover our past at the same time of discovering that we have a future connection with the great architects of the cosmos.
All right, let's take some calls with both of you. Let us go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona, to get things started. Blair, good morning.
Good morning, George. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Hurtak and Ron Garner, you mentioned, I think, Ron, you mentioned the microbiologists that have been eliminated, hundreds of them. Do you think there's a plan afoot that before we go to these next levels of technology and stuff, that there's going to be a major population reduction first? And the microbiologists are the line of defense to prevent this, and they're being taken out?
I think you're correct. I don't get into that too heavily, but I think you're right. That's the story on the Internet. I think there's something to that. That's why the
microbiologists... In my book, if I can jump in, entitled The Doomsday Conspiracy, which was written with the help of astronaut Gordon Cooper, we were scientific consultants to Sidney Sheldon, who wrote this book in the early 90s. I list in the back appendix the names of about 24 scientists and engineers in what we'll call electronic warfare, who disappeared and died under mysterious circumstances. Electronic warfare, remote sensing, microbiology, all of these are new areas of overlapping human ingenuity and invention with ET technology. And it's clear that there's more to the disappearance and death of these outstanding figures who have
shall we say, push the envelope too much too quickly, suggesting that we're on the brink of a great breakthrough with the new direction of science being the power of the mind to reach out and to even manipulate the technology of some of these UFO craft that are run or steered by the power of the mind.
Are they dimensional, JJ, or are they coming from planetary systems?
They're interdimensional. I have shown pictures of this. They are able to materialize and dematerialize as they did in several high-tech offices in South Africa a few years ago. What happens is the competing intelligences want to use our military and other military situations to sort of bleed down human civilization and pit one group against another, because we are in a consciousness vacuum. And until we raise our spirituality and work what I consider a higher musical vibration of hope and positive change, we will always be under the control of the fear paradigms, or shall we say the manipulation of the psyche through robotic devices. This is why Steve Halper and I put out a new tape called Sacred Name, Sacred Codes, that you can get from CD Baby or thekeysofenoch.org. This goes into the higher musical frequencies that are necessary to raise consciousness so you're not manipulated by all of these other factors behind the scenes of some areas of robotic science.
Okay, international caller Rex Mundy in Jamaica is with us. Hello, Rex. Go ahead.
Hello. I'd like to ask a question to J.J. Hurtick.
Sure.
But first, I want to say that I was an Ancient Astronaut Society member in 1978, and I guided Jerry Nudgebauer into finding the Nemesis star that's connected to our star, a dark star.
Yeah.
And the question I'd like to ask J.J. Hurtick is if you could briefly comment on his find of the Osiris tomb, because I was trying to guide the Ancient Astronaut Society into exploring underneath the Great Pyramid Complex in Egypt. And I noticed later on that they found a huge complex in Osiris's tomb under there, and I was wondering whether or not that was it. I also put up a website called bloodmoonavatar.com to explain the whole thing.
Thank you for the question. Yes, I was there with Joe Shore and other geologists, archaeologists, and remote sensing experts. We used radar. We went down 130 feet under the Giza Plateau with Desiree. My wife was with us also in 1997, and we came across what has been called in the popular literature the Tomb of Osiris. Zahi Hawass, however, did not give us permission to dig. We just had opportunities to film and do the remote sensing. We did find the lid of the tomb. We took pictures. We had put all of this on film. 2 years later, under Fox Television, Zahi Hawass announced to the world that he was the one who found the Tomb of Osiris. But he said, and I quote, but there was a group there 2 years before, which was our team, who did the real engineering, the real research. And now that Hawass is out of the picture, perhaps some of this film we took underground can be released, because clearly this was not doctored up. It was a finding of great significance, showing the interconnection with the whole labyrinthian structure underneath Giza. And this should be pursued by a new generation of archaeologists. In fact, Roger Lee was interested in my work under the Egyptian Giza Plateau, because there are records, we believe, and documents that could bring the three religions of Abraham closer together and avoid the mischiefs of the true believers in the Middle East.
So I wanted to say one thing in here. The J-Rod that Dr. Burries worked with went home in December 2003 through a portal in Abydos, Egypt. Abydos is one of the most spiritual parts of Egypt, and that's a long story which we can cover at another time. But there are these portals, you know, like in Egypt and Machu Picchu and Stonehenge and the Bermuda Triangle. And
you're absolutely right, Ron, and they do all interconnect in the sense of paraphysics. If you put a superimposition of these grid geometries over the map, they connect in a very interesting way, suggesting that they are not only portals for contact with other dimensional realities, but they are areas where energies can be produced. Alternative energy sources can be also tapped, and the concept of water hydrology, water physics can be understood, which is one of the secrets of how
the ley lines and the power systems. I'm good friends with Graham Hancock. I was the videographer for the Society for Scientific Exploration. And
Graham's a great worker, isn't he?
Oh, he's great. He's a personal friend. And Jacques Millet actually carried some of my camera equipment in one of the exposés that they had in Germany, which was a fun time with Jacques Millet.
So what do you two think of Edgar Cayce's thoughts about the Hall of Records being at the foot of the Sphinx? J.J.?
I think that there is something, obviously, to it. Dear colleagues, Robert Schott from Boston University, John Anthony West and others did pursue this in the early 90s, but it didn't get very far because of Egyptian politics, that is to say classical Egyptology, pretty much put the lid on the coffer. But work that's been done since that time has shown that there's several cavities that do connect, and that there's a whole structure that is before the Sphinx, perhaps was built because of geological situations of needing stability for the Giza complex of the Great Sphinx and that area beneath the Sphinx that does tie into the pyramids.
And how about you, Ron?
Yeah, I agree. The ley lines are important. There's something really important about the crop circles. I just love the crop circle phenomena. It's so beautiful and aesthetic. So I'm told the CIA and other intelligence people are recording all of this, but there's some kind of code. And that's where I think Dan Burrish can really flourish, because he is able to decipher these codes. Because when the J-Rod in 1996 climbed up on his chest, he was taking the tissue samples, and the J-Rod for the first time in 2 years made a step toward Dr. Burrish. Dr. Burrish was startled, and he caught his heel on the floor, fell backwards. J-Rod, he didn't jump on him. He walked over, looked deeply into his eyes, and downloaded all this information.
Huh.
So the people in intelligence kid Dan Burrish. He's Encyclopedia of Galactica, because this J-Rod loaded all this information into him. And I
did want to say also that one of the categories of ET intelligence has a type of headdress that looks like the ancient Egyptian headdress. Egypt has always been a period of historic period of fascination for all cultures. It's basically the matrix of the great civilizations passing through the Middle East. I would not be surprised that some of the ET visitors in the future would represent features somewhat identical to what you find in the esoteric drawings and portraits of these earlier Egyptian figures from a golden age, a period before the pharaohs began to monopolize and unfortunately destroy the higher points of Egyptian society, which even the ancient Israelites were aware of through the theology of Joseph and those who were guided in one earlier period of time.
Dr. Burrish has told me that at Area 51-S4, there's all these archives. They call them King Tut's. And he's read all those materials. And one last thing I wanted to put in here is with Stephen Bassett and the citizens' hearings. Before the citizens' hearings took place, Bassett talked to me about who I thought would be the best witnesses. And I gave him the name of 12 people. He chose one, which turned out to be Anonymous. And Anonymous was a star witness at the citizens' hearings a year ago, May. And one of the things that, Linda Howe actually interviewed Anonymous at great length in 96 and put him on Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast comes in all these sizes.
We're everywhere.
It's wonderful. I love it.
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Only a few minutes left. Michael, go ahead.
Because we have so little time, George, I want you to put me on hold so I can give you two websites where these
sure.
these two gentlemen can keep in touch with what I've been saying on this subject. Revelation 12:9 tells us about an extraterrestrial race which deceives the whole world. Now, we talk about government disclosure. We talk about public disclosure. Coast to Coast is public disclosure. Government disclosure you don't want, because the extraterrestrials, which are deceiving the whole world, have control of this great Protestant republic as anti-Protestant Nazis. So put me on hold. I'll give you the website, and these two gentlemen can have that information too.
Okay.
But I don't want it to go public. I don't want it to go public.
This is a scholar of ancient biblical texts, both in the Hebrew and Greek. This week is Passover, which is the Exodus out of Egypt, and there is this dialectic between the forces of light and the forces, we would call them the experimental gods, or the forces of negation, and this is something that is behind some of the reluctance of governments to release, because it requires a spiritual paradigm which secular governments do not accept. But again, to put this in proper terminology, we are, as a human society, being prepared for a type of planetary exodus into a new cosmology, a deeper understanding of the positive values of the divine creation that we are part of. All of the conspiratorial paradigms will fall away if we begin to align ourselves with the divine source and realize that the great prophets, the mystics, the poets, scholars, on all sides of the equation of ancient Near Eastern history are telling us that we are part of a greater tree of life, and that we are just one branch of many branches in this great house of many mansions, that we are going to discover that we ultimately are being prepared to be cosmic citizens.
And I agree. I'm a congenital optimist. There's a way around this, George, and there's all kinds of problems, but we have a lot of help. Help's on the way, and it's all already here. So,
well, we do, but at any point, Ron, do you think that some of the ETs could be dangerous to us?
I think about 20% are, most of them are indifferent, but some are really negative, and that's one of the things that our military is concerned about, because Dan Burrish has told me that through these portals, as we move through our galaxy, there are portals that open, like in Skywalker Ranch that George Knapp knows all about. And these portals, they don't know what kind of creatures are going to come through. And, you know, there's all kinds of stories and folklore about all this, and but I think we're going to get through it. There's people.
We got to be careful about it, that's for sure. Thank you, both of you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.